Second Chronicles 2:1, the Bible says, Solomon determined to build a house for the name of the Lord. In Acts 11:29, it says, the disciples determined to send relief to the brethren which dwelt in Judea. In Acts 20:16, it says, for Paul had determined to sail by Ephesus. 1 Corinthians 2:2, the Apostle Paul said, I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified. In 2 Corinthians 2:1, but I determined this with myself. The word determination in the Bible, very interestingly, comes from the word, the Greek word is horizo, which comes from our word horizon. New horizons. Looking up and saying, I'm going to build a fence or a boundary around that which I see, and I am going to have it. I am going to do it. Determination. Plain old dogged determination. Two young people grow up in the same house. They eat at the same table. They're reared by the same parents. They go to the same church. They sit in the classroom at the same school. They hear the same teaching. They hear the same preaching. And yet, at the altar of marriage, one is clean and pure, and the other is unchaste and impure. What's the difference? Determination. One said, I'm building a boundary around my purity, and nobody's going to get it. I'm determined to walk down that aisle as a bride, as clean as the gown on my back. The other says, I don't see anything wrong with the new morality, the permissive society. What's the difference in those two young ladies? The difference is determination. Two young men grow up in the same neighborhood, maybe even in the same house, sit side by side in church, sit side by side in school. One young man stands here at the altar on his wedding day, as clean and as pure as he can be. The other, spotted and spoiled and soiled by sin, giving a second-hand groom, a second-hand gift, body, to the lady, young lady of his choosing, and God's choosing. One is clean, the other is not. Same preaching, same school, same church, same advantages, maybe even the same parents. What's the difference? One word. Determination. One says, I'm going to be pure when I get married. I'm going to be clean, chaste, virgin. The other has no such determination. Two young men go to the same school, sit in the same classes, eat at the same table, sleep in the same dormitory, read at the same library, read the same books, hear the same preaching, maybe even work at the same plant. One young man graduates, gets his degree, goes out and succeeds in life. The other flounders in failure, does not graduate, does not get his degree, never finishes what he started to do. What's the difference? One word. Determination. Determination. I have looked at great men for these many years. I have read as many biographies of great men as anybody could read. I used to read a half a dozen biographies every week of my life when I was a young preacher. I've walked with Spurgeon in Metropolitan Tabernacle. I've sat beside Moody in great coliseums. I've walked with Billy Sunday down the sawdust trails. I've sat beside Savonarola on the platform. I've sat beside Martin Luther at the Diet of Worms. I've sat beside John Calvin in Geneva. I've sat beside John Wesley in the Wesley Chapel. I've sat beside Mel Trotter and Paul Rader and others, great preachers through these years. There's one thing that every successful person has, and that thing is determination. I'll not be beaten. I'll not fail. I'll not stop. I'll not quit. I am determined. I am determined. I've made up my mind. I'll serve the Lord. I am determined. I've made up my mind. I'll serve the Lord. I'll follow wherever He leadeth. I'll pasture wherever he feedeth. I am determined. I've made up my mind. I'll serve the Lord. Look at Solomon dedicating that magnificent temple. Look at the massive stones. Look at those giant cedars of Lebanon. Look at that beautiful Tyrian tapestry on the walls. Look, if you would, at the delicate carving of cherubim. Look at those marble pillars that hold up the porch. Look at the precious stones gleaming amidst the gold. Look at that lovely lily work of God's magnificent temple. Who built it? Solomon. Wonder why he did. Solomon said, Solomon determined to build a house for the name of the Lord. Determination. Determination. I determined with myself. Years ago, in France, there was an election or a poll that determined the outstanding Frenchman in history. Everybody thought, Napoleon, of course, he is the outstanding Frenchman in history. To the amazement of many, when the election was over, it was not Napoleon who was chosen France's outstanding personage, but the outstanding Frenchman history was none other than Louis Pasteur. When Louis Pasteur was inaugurated at his admission into the French Academy, he said these words, "Blessed is the man who has in himself an ideal and who obeys it, an ideal of art, an ideal of science, an ideal of virtue. Therein lies the springs of great thoughts and great actions." That person who's lifted out of himself, he says, I have an idea. I have a thought. I have a passion. I have a desire. I have an aim. I have a goal. And that person who is wrapped up and lifted above himself, and he says, I'm determined. I will not turn back. I will not fail. I will succeed. That determination. And that's the great thing that makes great men. Someone said, and I think this is worth listening to carefully, a man is never at his best when he's being served. Did you hear me? A man is never at his best when he's being served. When some valet is laying out his clothes for him, or when some chauffeur is opening the door for him, only when he is being lifted out of himself by something greater than himself, to which he is devoting himself, is man at his best. Hear me again. Only when he is lifted out of himself to something that is greater than himself, to which he is devoting himself. And ushers, keep the rules back here now. I'm going to read it again. Only when he is being lifted out of himself by something greater than himself, to which he is devoting himself. There are folks sitting in this room this morning have not one goal in this world. You have not one dream in your mind. You have not one hope burning in your breast. You sit here like an amoeba with no plans and no goals. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Why don't you develop that thing to say, I'm going to get something and I'm going to have a goal for my life and I'm going to have a purpose for my life and I am determined to reach that goal and do that which has lifted me out of myself. John Calvin said, they may crush me, but the truth I teach, they cannot crush. When Thomas Kettle died, he wrote something to his daughter that is worth every person knowing. Thomas Kettle was a warrior. He did not choose to be so, but he was a warrior. And Thomas Kettle said these words, or wrote these words to his daughter upon his death. He said, I died not for the flag, not for the king, nor for the emperor, but I died for a dream born in a herdsman's shed. A dream born in a herdsman's shed. That young lad that sits in Hammond Baptist High School, who all of a sudden is lifted out of himself and he sees himself out yonder as a medical doctor. He sees a shingle on the door. He sees his name on that shingle. He sees himself in that office. He sees a white cape or coat around his shoulders. He sees a stethoscope hanging from his neck. And he says, that's what I want to be. That's what I want God wants me to be. That's the will of God for my life. And he keeps his eyes focused on that. He's lifted out of himself, and he says, that's it. Every time he goes to the study hall, he sees himself with a stethoscope around his neck. Every time he goes to math class, he sees himself with a shingle on his door. Every time he goes to the library, he sees himself with that picture of himself, that goal, that image, that idea, that something that consumes him. Oh, if I could reach out and grab you this morning and say to you, whatever that thing is that God has called you to be, determine yourself to be your best for God. Herbert Spencer said, progress is not an accident, but a beneficent necessity. Marmont said something about Napoleon worth noting. He said, there is so much future in his mind. So much future in his mind. That's one of the great problems with America. There's no future much in our minds anymore. There's so much future in Napoleon's mind. Here's what stops the country. We take the future out of our mind. Here's where churches die. The future is taken from their minds. Here's where men falter. There's no future in our minds. Here's where businesses fail. There's no future in the mind of the owner. This is where young people stumble. There's no future in our minds. Listen. That young person sitting on a dark road somewhere about to give himself to impurity, indecency. Think of the future. Future in your mind. That's what makes churches succeed. That's what makes young folks turn out right. That's what builds great businesses. Future in our mind. Oh, to have a passion. To be lifted above oneself. To climb above the smoke of fleshly desires, passion. To climb above the fog of selfishness. To climb above the mist of self-centeredness. To stand on the peak of sunlit vision. To give oneself to a cause. As Lincoln gave himself to save democracy. And Wilberforce to liberate slaves. And Reed and Pasteur to eliminate disease. And Jesus, instead of Jesus, he set his face like a flint toward Jerusalem. Man, this old country is dying today for lack of some men who say, I have a cause. I'm determined. I've got an idea. I see an electric light. I see a light burning. I'm going to build it. I'm going to invent it. I'm going to discover what's necessary. I'm going to see it burning. I see a needle and I see a record and I hear noise coming from that record as that record goes around and that needle goes in that record. I hear in my mind noise coming. I hear a voice going into that record and the voice coming out when that needle, the record's turned on and that needle goes round and round that record. I hear voices. I see a steamboat chugging down a river. It's in my mind. It's never been done, but I see it. I see a printing press. I see a college. I see a church. I see an auditorium. I see a great adult reared at my knees. I see something that others do not see. I have risen higher, and I have seen farther, and I have a vision, a goal, a plan. That's the kind of thing that will save America. But until we get out of this loser's complex we have and this loser's syndrome, until we can get to the place where in Cuba beats us in boxing, we can't sleep at night. We get the place to where in Russia and East Germany beats us in the Olympic Games. We can't sleep at night. We've got to get consumed again with victory and a cause and determination to say we're not going to be normal. We're not going to be average. We're not going to be usual. We're going to rise above the normal to the abnormal, above the average to the above average, above the usual to the unusual. That's what's made America. That's what's built this church. That's what's built this nation. That's what's made great schools. That's what's made great ministries. That's what's built great businesses. And that's what's absent in America today. Determination. I'll do it. I'll do it. I cannot fail. Mount Matterhorn was never scaled until 1865. 1865, for the first time, Mount Matterhorn was scaled. Shortly thereafter, somebody scaled Mount Matterhorn and climbed to its peak. Oh, by the way, he was blind. Blind. Until 1865, nobody ever climbed to its peak. And then soon after, a blind man climbed to its peak. And somebody asked this blind man, why did you climb the peak? You could not see the view. And the blind man said, I climbed Mount Matterhorn because it was there. Because it was there. Loneliness is here. Poverty is here. Unsaved folks by the millions are here. Disease is here. Sin is here. Narcotics, dope is here. Liquor is here. Waste is here. Failure is here. Why doesn't somebody say, I'm going to give my life to the poor because they're here. I'm going to build a great church because the lost are here. Determination. A great king in France once said, when I'm dead, take out my heart and you will find France engraved on it. Could I say this? My life, for the last many years, has been built around one single thing. And it haunts me and drives me day after day and month after month and year after year. And that one single thing, that one passion I've got, is to do what I can to do my part to save this nation for our kids. I feel so guilty that we have handed our kids a national debt that's unbelievable. I feel so guilty that we've lived our own selfish lives and spin up everything. We use up the oil. We use up the gas. We use up the money. We got these stupid credit cards we carry in our pockets. We're not going to pay off that debt. The average one of us owes thousands of dollars right now. We won't live to pay off these debts. We'll say to our kids, take my debts and pay them, and take my credit card and pay the debts, and take our national debt and pay it. And I've been consumed for these many years with one great passion. I want David Jack Hiles and Becky Jan Smith and Linda Lou Murphy and Cindy Lynn Hiles and all the other Linda Lou's and Cindy Lynn's and Becky Jan's and David Jack's all across this church and all across this land. I want them to know the same kind of country that we've had. When I counsel, it's in my mind, America, we've got to save it. When I get on the airplane on Monday morning, it's in my mind, America, we've got to save it. When I sit on the platform to preach on Monday night, as I'll do in Chattanooga tomorrow night, in my mind it'll be America. We've got to save it. When I administrate, it's there. When I organize, it's there. When I counsel, it's there. When I plan, it's there. When I study, it's there. When I teach, it's there. When I preach, it's there. It consumed me by day and consumed me by night. Why? Because I believe that God has called me to try to reach out and grab preachers and shake them and stir them. And you say, what are you trying to say? I'm trying to say, get you a purpose in life. Decide why you're here. Oh, you people that just go, get up in the morning and go to work. Work 8 hours and come home and plop down in front of that stupid box and watch it till bedtime. And then go to bed and sleep 8 hours and get up and feed your stomach and go to work the next morning and you work 8 hours and come home and plop down beside that dumb box and watch All in the Family and MASH and The Bionic Woman and the Super Idiot Man and all the rest of that junk and garbage and filth and rot. And then you go to bed and sleep 8 hours and you get up and you go to work and you work 8 and you come home and watch the box for 8 and you go to bed and sleep for 8 and go to work and work for 8 and come home, watch the box for 8 and go to bed and sleep for 8. There is something more in life than that. There's a country perishing. There's a nation going to hell. Listen, you sit in the house. I'm only a mother. What can I do? I can't build a great church. I can't found a great college. I can't discover the incandescent light, invent it. I can't discover pasteurized milk or a cure for polio like Mr. Salk did. I'm just a mother. I'll tell you what you can do. You can have as your one consumed passion that little thing that lies in my crib is not going to grow up untrained, unloved, uncared for, and untaught. You can say, with the grace of God, this old world may go to hell, but there's one little baby there not going to go to hell. Listen to me. When Becky Jan Hiles was born on December 5th, 1951, I got in there, I picked her little body up, and I put it down on the floor, and I got on my knees in front of that body, and I looked down to hell, and I said, look, listen, old sweaty face, you may get every kid in this country, but you're not getting Becky Jan Hiles. You're not going to get her. I'll see to it. You dirty liar. Go on back to hell. You can't have her. When David Jack Hiles was born, I got on my knees over his body, and I said to the devil, I said, you can't have him. I'll guarantee you, you can't have him.
When Linda Lou was born, I got on my knees over her, and I said, devil, you can't have her. Every parent in this building can do that. If God has placed in your hands a little lump of flesh and a never dying immortal soul inside that little body, you can say America may go to hell. Young folks may grow their hair long, but he won't. And young folks may drink their liquor, but he won't. And young folks may take their dope, but he won't. That little bundle of flesh that God has given me, I have a consuming passion. He will turn out right, and I'll see it. And I'll see to it. Oh, my soul, what's wrong with this? This plush society, this affluent society, when even the poor folks think they've got to have two cars. And a young married couple, been married 2 weeks, feel like they're suffering for Jesus if they don't have a dishwasher and a washing machine, a dryer. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Dryers and dishwashers and washing machines and power lawnmowers and beautiful homes and air-conditioned cars have done more to ruin us than they have to help us. Why? They've taken away that distinctive ruggedness out of us. Taken away that thing that makes us say we will succeed. Listen, funny thing to me. Back when mothers used to have to wash in a black pot in the backyard. An iron with a iron had to put on the wood stove till it got hot, and then iron quickly till it gets cool, and put it back on the wood stove till it got hot, then iron till it gets cool. When they rolled up their hair, they had to get a curling ironer and put it inside of the kerosene lamp till it got hot, and then stick it in the hair and roll up the hair around it for a while, then let it out. When we had to make butter with a churn and buttermilk with a churn and had kerosene lamps and wood stoves. It's a funny thing to me. We had time to rear our kids right in those days. Let me tell you something now. Listen to me. You mothers that sit there and watch that dirty box in the afternoon as the world turns and the edge of night and the secret storm and the doctors and the nurses and your children are going to hell. And you think, invariably what you'll do, if they don't turn out right, you'll blame the youth department. Or you'll blame the school. Or you'll blame Mr. O'Claire or Mr. Staub. What you need to do is get in your mind a goal and say, that little boy is going to make me proud of him. And I'll see to it. Determination. I am determined. I've made up my mind. You young preachers, you don't have to fail. You don't have to fail. You can succeed. And if you'll say, by the grace of God, I've got the grit and determination and intestinal fortitude, and I'm going to do it. Now, with determination, there always comes a struggle. And usually, that struggle comes right after the decision to determine and persevere is made. When Martin Luther entered the city of Worms, when he was going to stand or die, he suddenly had, as he made that decision, a fit of fear gripped him. And Martin Luther cried these words, and folks could hear him cry, and said with pathos, he said, "Oh God, help me!" All of a sudden, when he determined to do it, all of a sudden he felt a sense of temptation and weakness. On May the 24th, 1783, in a little room at Aldersgate Street in London, John Wesley had an experience that was to change the Western civilization. But he said that same night after Aldersgate, I quote, he said, "There came a heaviness of spirit and manifold temptation that same night." Moody once heard a young man say, "The world has yet to see what God can do with one man wholly surrendered to God's will." And Dwight L. Moody said, "By the grace of God, I'll be that man." And that next day, Moody said, and I quote, he trembled like a leaf before some unexpected gust of temptation. I recall when I was called to pastor this church, I did not want to come to Hammond. I did not want to come to Chicago. I did not want to come to this great metropolitan complex. I wanted to stay in Texas. And then
I knew all of a sudden I was consumed with the fact that God had called me to come. I resigned my church. I've never seen a funeral as sad as that service. We stopped, and I guess for almost an hour, did nothing but weep. Folks began to scream and holler. People would lean against the wall, put their head against the wall like that, and cry openly. Nobody could speak. Not I, not anyone could speak, I guess, for almost an hour. I've never seen anything like it. I resigned. The next day, I felt like I'd done the wrong thing. The next day, I felt like God wanted me to stay in Garland. You say, why didn't you stay? I was afraid to stay. I had made up my mind in faith what God wanted me to do. I would not change my mind in doubt after I'd made that decision. For one day, I knew I was supposed to come to Hammond. For 29 days after that, while I waited to come here, I felt I should not come. Why? Because God told me to come, then turned the devil loose on me for 29 days to see if I'd come on anyway. I love to watch those buses roll. We have three or four that will roll. I love to watch them roll. I love to remember when I used to get on my knees at the altar over here and beg God to do something to turn this church loose. I'd drive them down the streets of Chicago and say, oh my God, when are we going to get started? For 1 year, for 2 years, for 3 years, we couldn't get unstuck, and every time we'd get a new one, we'd lose an old one. And then I recall that day when the Steffes wanted to give us $6,000 to do something for the Lord. Brother Jim Lyons and I began to pray about what shall we do with this $6,000. And back in those days, $6,000 was like $60,000 now. And we believed that God had told us to buy six buses, six used buses. We bought those six used buses. We believe God is going to use them to do something here in this church. I love to see those buses roll by the dozens and scores out here on Sunday morning, and those thousands of people come in. And remember the dream we had back in those days that someday God would give us a great bus ministry. I love to travel up and down this country and see buses parked in churchyards up and down this country, and then realize that most of those buses parked there because of the vision we had back yonder when church buses were almost unheard of. Determination. I love to walk through Baptist City. Remember how it was when Mr. Baldwin over here told us about that property out there in Shearville. I love to walk through the high school yard and the campus and on the campus of the grade school and all those dormitories there. And I love to remember the wilderness that it was. You couldn't even see 20 feet in front of you because of just plain old wilderness and swamp. And I love to look at it and walk by there, remember when it's like that. But I didn't see that wilderness. I saw the high school standing where it stands today. I saw the grade school standing where it stands today. I saw in my mind those dormitories, and I saw in my mind a college there. I didn't see a wilderness. I saw something else. And you recall those days we took up the money and I met with little groups of 50 to 60 to 100 people and explained in detail one group after another, what we had in mind. And God gave us that $2 million which we built Baptist City, and now we have that high school complex there. I love to drive by the cemetery and recall how God gave us that cemetery when I knelt to pray there one day for God to give it to us. I love to go out to Hiles Anderson College and walk up and down the campus and remember how I used to go out there once a month and take off my shoes and walk over the campus and pray all night and say, oh my God, you got to give us this campus. And the Catholics said you can't have it, and the priest out there said I wouldn't send it to the Baptists. The Baptists are the last folks I'd send it to. And I said, that's the last folks you're going to send it to. And I remember that determination, and that we've got to have it, 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 we've got to have it. I love to walk through this building when it's empty and see this great giant of a building with its thousands of seats and remember how it seemed like it was so impossible. Determination. I love to go over there to 122 167th Street in Calumet City where my mother lives and rethink those years when she said, I'm going to rear a boy. His daddy may be drunk, but I'm going to take care of him. I may have to work for 50 cents a day, but I'm going to take care of him. I may have laid my firstborn baby girl in the grave, but I'm going to rear my boy. I may have laid my secondborn child in the grave, but I'm going to rear my boy. That determination that makes Susanna Wesley's, that determination that makes Jochebed's, that determination that makes Hannah's, that determination that makes Elizabeth's. I mean the kind that says, I'm not going to lose. I'm going to get it. That's mine out there. I've got it. Boundaries around it. And that's mine. I want that mountain. Be determined, young man. Be determined to walk the aisle with the altar clean. Be determined, young lady, to give yourself at the altar a pure virgin. Be determined, little lady, trying to rear a child or children by yourself. I sat in the office last night, with a young lady, widowed, just a young lady, 3 children to rear, husband died on the operating table. Questions: what should I do about a place to live? Where should I buy or rent? If I buy, where should I buy? If I rent, where should I rent? Be determined, young lady. Be determined that you're going to see to it those 3 children turn out right. Be determined, dear widow, who has nothing but a picture on the wall or a picture on the hearth or on the table of one who shared life with you. Be determined that little girl that's left in your home is going to turn out right. Picture her clean and pure and decent and right. Be determined. This morning early, long time before the sun came up and long time before I even got out of bed, I was tossing in bed and thinking about determination. Oh, my soul, I've got so many things I want to do. There's so many dreams I've got. Dr. Evans, I have a dream that before I die, I have a dream that before I die, those of us going up and down the country, I have a dream that in every town of any size there'll be a soul-winning church like this. I have a dream that before I die, and I want to see it, every town, every little child that's a Christian child will have a Christian school close enough where he can go to school and be taught the Bibles, the Word of God, not be in these humanistic government schools that are destroying our generation. My soul is burning for young men aflame with the gospel to go up and down this country and build great soul-winning churches. I'm consumed by it. A long time before the sun came up this morning, I relived that sweet, precious experience that we'll relive together now again. When the news came that some of our high school students had been in a serious car wreck on Highway 41, and folks, let me tell you something. I beg you, be careful driving on these highways. But for the grace of God, Linda could be in heaven today. And Dave could be in heaven. 15 car wrecks in a 6-hour period on one strip of Highway 30 alone. Be careful. You don't lose but one time. That's all. Driving down Highway 41, drive on the right side. Don't drive on that inside lane. One guy on dope can swerve 12 inches and you're gone. And the message came. There's been a car wreck. 2 of our girls are near death. Young man driving the car was killed instantly. Now rushed out to Dyer Mercy Hospital. Little Sharon Stromberg was at the point of death. I walked in to the doctor. I said, Doc, how is she? And he said, she won't live but a few minutes. Just a few minutes. He said, we haven't bothered even to set any bones. We shaved her head and took some stitches in her head. But we haven't bothered to set any bones. She won't live but a few minutes. I went up there in that little private room in intensive care. Asked everybody to leave. I couldn't have recognized her. Little face was battered and swollen. Head was shaved and dried blood on her face. And she was...
I put my mouth next to her ear. And I said, "Sharon, this is Brother Hiles. I don't know if you can hear me or not, but Sharon, I love you. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, Sharon. The doctor said you can't live. But I don't believe the doctor. I believe you can live." And I said, "Sharon, you can. You can, Sharon, you can. You can, Sharon, you can. Yes, you can, Sharon, you can." Every day I was in town, nobody knew when I went. I tiptoed, got my car and tiptoed up the back stairs in Mercy Hospital to that little room where Sharon's little body was lifeless. The second day I went, the doctor, I said, "Doc, how is she?" He said, "She's still alive, but she won't be alive any breath of your last." I put my mouth right next to her ear, and I said, "Sharon, this is Brother Hiles. I'm going to be honest with you, Sharon. The doctor says you can't live, but I say you can. You can, Sharon, 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 you can." Days became weeks, and weeks became several months. And every day I was at home, I went up there, up those back stairs, went inside that little room and told Sharon she could. "You can, Sharon, you can. You can, Sharon, you can. You can, Sharon, you can." Can we ever forget the day when she came to church the next time? Sat back here. Pulpit was right here. Maybe it was here. Maybe this building was built. I think it was. They called the ushers, came down the aisle. Sharon was back there. We stood and applauded Sharon and gave her a standing ovation. I think we stood. No, we gave her an ovation. She was back. She'd been in a coma for weeks and weeks. Nobody thought she'd live. Forgive me. I did. I never knew. She never responded. She was in a coma. Usher came down the aisle that day to take the offering. He didn't stop here. He just kept on coming and handed me a note. I opened the note. It was from Sharon. All it said was, "Dear Brother Hiles." I did. I did. She got well. And of course, that day when I heard, that Saturday afternoon, when I heard that their house had burned, a few months later, Christmas time, rushed out to the house, went inside that house that was burned beyond recognition, nearly inside, looked in the bathroom, and there was Sharon's little body, burned to death. I think the Lord wanted Sharon in heaven. Sharon wouldn't go. She kept pulling back. The Lord said, "Come on, Sharon." She said, "I'm not going to go yet. For the house praying for me." One of these days soon, you and I will stand up, stand before our Savior. And I want to hand him a note. And I'd like for that note to say, "Dear Jesus, I did. I did. Oh, beloved friend of mine and child of God, there's a reason why you're here. God didn't put you here by accident. You're no uh-oh. You're an on purpose. God sent you in this world. And there is a mountain God wants you to claim. Rise up." Caleb of old and say, "I want that mountain. I want that mountain where the grapes of Eskel grow, where the milk and honey flow. I want that mountain where it belongs to me." Determine. Determine. Say with the apostle, "I have determined with myself." Our Heavenly Father.